Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. One of the things I always look for in a guest from this show is for those people that are not only doing their part to get their own works out there, but are also doing their part to help other people get their works out there as well. Katerina Stoykova is the perfect person to have on this show, because not only is she also giving emphasis on something that is not given all that much emphasis yet on this show, which is poetry, a genre that really needs to be celebrated a lot more. She is living in Kentucky, originally from Bulgaria, and has three master's degrees in the U.S. She has worked as a software engineer and a project manager, but then decided to not only focus her emphasis on writing, but also on publishing, because she is also the founder and senior editor of Accents Publishing, which is strongly committed to providing a source for diverse voices. And she is also the creator of the Accents podcast, which can be found on WUKY as well as NPR. She has quite an amazing history to her, and something to be celebrated for not only all the work that she has done, but everything she is doing for other creatives as well. So it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Katerina Stoykova. Katerina, how are you?
I'm doing great, George. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's an honor to be here.
And thank you. Thank you so much for reaching out. And once again, I must give credit to podmatch.com for bringing us together. For over 5 years, I've been a member of that site, and Alex has done a fantastic job putting it together. And once again, this is just a testament to the work that he's done by having these amazing creative people here. I'd like to start off by asking, what got you into wanting to create this publishing house in the first place?
First, what is Accents Publishing? Accents Publishing is an independent press for brilliant voices. We decided to start it as a poetry chapbook press in which we made little poetry books by hand. Ooh. My home was covered in paper and printers and cutters. And the first 13 or so books from our press were 30 to 50 pages, miniature, perfect bound books. They were very successful. We couldn't make them fast enough, but I found myself not being able to do anything else. I was just printing and binding and trying to remember whose cover stock goes with what kind of paper. At some point, a friend pointed out that printing is not publishing. I never wanted to be a printer. I wanted to be a publisher. Mm-hmm. So we found a printer to use for our publishing. And we started publishing poetry books and then added other genres slowly as well. We have been, up to this point, a predominantly poetry press. We have published about 110 books over the 15 years that we've been in business. And about 90, I would say, are poetry books. But we have also memoirs, creative nonfiction. We have novels, short story collections. And this, starting next year, we plan to expand in a bigger way. The last 2 months of this year, we will have an open reading period in which we will read work in all genres imaginable, because we want to expand our business in 2027. Mm-hmm. We'll be reading at the end of this year for our 2027 catalog. We want to see anything. We want to be surprised and find work that we love and create something together.
That's wonderful. And that's a great, amazing start for the whole thing, because it really feels like a handmade company, really.
Well, we started very small with whatever we thought we could do a good job on. We started with a $300 investment. Mm-hmm. In right now, one of the better known publishers in Kentucky and the region. And we hope to be really national and international.
Really? So you're going into the international market as well?
Well, our distribution is worldwide. We distribute through Ingram, so we already have the international reach. Mm-hmm. We have international reach and some international authors. But right now we have bigger ambitions, and we want to put the time, work, and investment, whatever it takes. My dream is to grow access.
Absolutely. And sounds like it's already on its way into growing. The authors that you have, like the first one that decided to reach out to you and take a chance on Accents, were your authors strictly in the Kentucky area, or were you accepting submissions from all around the world?
We started very local, mm-hmm. and we wanted to be a local press with global reach. Nice. The first two authors were two authors from my writing group, two people I thought were ready, and they did well, and their books turned out great, and they're long since sold out completely. Mm-hmm. Right now, one of the projects that I do is I translate poetry from Bulgarian, that's where I'm from, originally, right. into English, and once a year, I publish a book by a Bulgarian poet that I have translated, but I'm looking into publishing other Bulgarian authors. And I'm always interested in an author from abroad. I've been talking mm-hmm. to someone from Turkey, amazing writer. Anything that seems in line with our goals and aesthetic, you don't know until you see it that you want it. Sometimes.
Absolutely. That's definitely what you're doing right now, getting that sort of attention. And looks like it's on its way. I'm really excited to see what the future is for Accents. And not only have you branched from writing to publishing, but also from writing to publishing and podcasting. So was this a means of getting more attention on the publishing house, or something you wanted as an offshoot of the publishing house?
Well, actually, it was the other way around. I first started a radio show mm-hmm. called Accents. The joke was that I like foreign accents so much that I came up with a fake one to use on the radio.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, I don't normally sound like that. It's just on media. That show was very successful and popular, the radio show. Mm-hmm. And then when I decided that I want to start a publishing company, then it wasn't even a question. It was Accents Publishing. This is it. Then I have done other things, and I just put the Accents name on it because I guess that's part of my brand.
Yeah.
And I can't really get rid of that accent. Not that I want to, not that I've tried. It's really neat because there are pockets of people who listen to the radio that my radio show was on, and I would go to the Good Foods Co-op, and when I mm-hmm. check out, they'll say, oh, I know who you are. I recognize you by the voice.
So it's
kind of characteristic. I also say that I couldn't get rid of my accent, so I made a career out of it.
That's great. It's a good way to just pivot into something you feel like you were trying to get away from, but then realize it wound up being kind of a niche.
I think that being in a niche is wonderful, but once you get established into the niche, then you don't want to be bound by it. So you might want to see where and how to branch out. And I feel like this is the moment where we do that.
One of the things that I love to hear about for all of my guests is what got them on what I call the road to creativity. That's when you experience something, read something, meet someone, and you decide, that's what I want to do. And then whatever road you're on, you just take that exit ramp, and all of a sudden you're on this whole other journey. What was it about writing and poetry that really got you into doing it in the first place?
Well, there were several moments in my life that I recall right now. The first is when I was 8 years old in school, and the teacher brought a poet to talk about poetry and what a poet does. I cannot recall his name, but I'll never forget the sense of my soul's recognition. That's it. That's what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to do. So I went home after class and I told my mom, "Mom, I'm going to be a poet." And I don't think she believed me very much, but I went in my room and I wrote a poem. And I wasn't sure if I could do it, but I scribbled something. And then I did it again. And eventually, I liked that way of self-expression. So I wrote and eventually started publishing until I was 24, and then I immigrated to the United States.
Okay.
Once I lost the language and other creative people around me, that didn't help my creativity. Actually,
yeah.
I think the whole shock of immigration contributed to me not writing for 11 years.
Really? 11 years, huh?
11 years of silence in which I just focused on work, and I worked like mad, like 24/7. That's my purpose of living, to work for the American economy.
So you were basically just trying to get yourself established.
Well, I think that it was more like trying to escape my own life by working too much so I don't have to think about anything else. Because when I wrote a poem about that, I wrote a line in it that you become depressed on your days off. Because that is the time when you actually have a little bit of time to feel the loneliness and the difficulties and how lost you are. So eventually, after 11 years, this is the defining moment that I was driving towards work. I felt the charge of poetry, kind of like electricity that zaps you slightly. Poets are strange in that way, like being zapped by electricity. I pulled in a Kroger parking lot, a grocery store we have here, pulled the notepad that I have my to-dos, and I wrote a poem for first time in 11 years.
How did that feel, being able to do that again? Was it just feeling like you're kind of tapping into the old you?
That felt like I was being bathed in light. Felt like I am coming back to myself. And two things actually. I wrote that poem in English. And before that, I had written in Bulgarian.
Yeah.
And I wrote in English. So that shocked me a little bit. But the other thing that shocked me even more is that you're a writer, so you know when you write and when you do something creative, there is a physical pleasure associated with that.
Truly, truly.
Truly, truly.
Yeah.
So I felt that. And I felt that for first time in 11 years.
Mm.
And I felt that it was the same pleasure whether you write in Bulgarian or in English. And the third thing that happened, I said, I will never let this go again.
Yes. So it really is like a physical feeling of joy that you get once you're doing the things that have been inside you. For some reason, you've stopped doing it, locked it away, or you've just kind of taken a hiatus from. When you start going back into it, it's kind of similar to what Stephen King was once saying, how when he had a brief hiatus from writing while dealing with his own addictions, when he started again, it came off very rusty, but it was also similar to moving into a summer home after many months of not being there. And then once you turn the air conditioning and power back on and give it a little bit for everything to run, it starts to feel more like the home it was. I would say it was similar to that vibe to it. It really is something very special.
You're right, George. What you said about cleaning the home and turning on the air conditioner. After 11 years of not writing and moreover writing in a different language, my poems weren't very good. My new poems were plenty terrible, let's say, the truth. And then I figure out that actually I'm going to have to throw away at least 1 year worth of writing. And then I got very mad, really upset about it. And then kind of like with certain amount of chagrin, I agreed. Fine, I'll do it. And it waxed. And that's what happened. I'm glad I did it.
That's something that's very maturing when it comes to being a writer. You have to know when something's not working. Then you have to just decide to maybe put it away and start something else. But dedicating that time, I never consider that wasteful. I consider that as you're going to the gym. You're getting yourself back in shape. And that's kind of what you were doing there, wouldn't you say?
Without the willingness of wasting time, I agree that time is never wasted. But without that willingness to waste time and effort, writing is not for you.
Yeah. There are so many people that just want everything to be perfect the first time. I'll admit, I always feel that same sort of feeling myself. That's just me being impatient. I've been spending so much time with the characters that I'm with that I really feel that I just want to get it right that first time. But that's the perfectionist in me. And that's something that is very hobbling. You have to be willing to write crap. You have to be willing to write something that is not perfect. I remember hearing one thing, perfect is the enemy of done.
I love that. I like the word that you said there, hobbling. Hobbling, yeah. Writing is incredibly humbling.
Yes, it is.
So until you humble yourself, you're going to hobble yourself.
I love that.
High five, George.
There you go. That's exactly what it feels like when you are so focused on getting it right that first time, and it just takes years to get things done, and it takes so much time away from it when you could have just spent that time getting the story down, laying down the groundwork, laying down the foundation. It was something that I have shown to other people when I've talked about National Novel Writing Month, a month-long exercise where you are writing a full first draft of a novel in 30 days. It comes out to 50,000 words. There are way too many people that use this and think, oh, I can just hit publish on December 1st. And that's not the case, because what you've done is you've created a draft. You've created the foundation. And I show them as an illustration, I show them a picture of the house that we used to live in that was being built. And it was just the foundation. They poured the foundation. And also all there is just the basement. I said, this is where you are right now. Is it ready to move in? No. So you have to keep on working at it. You have the rest of the house to build. And you're only going to do that through the rewrites.
I agree.
Yeah. Once you got that sort of feeling back and you started coming back to yourself, when you finished that first batch of poems and you finally were able to get it out into book form, what was that feeling like for you?
Well, once I started writing again and said, I'll never let that go, I knew that I needed to find people like me. I started a poetry group here in town, which is still meeting, by the way.
That's great.
I would say 17 years later.
17 years. That's fantastic.
And I went to formally study writing in an MFA program, which was paramount for my success as a published writer. So I needed to not only learn to write again, but I also needed to learn about writing in English. And I also needed to catch up on some cultural things and some reading that all Americans would have read in school or grown up with. So the first year in workshop, people would mention names and I would just scribble like mad. I wouldn't even know how to spell names that they grew up with. And then I decided that I'm going to just quit my engineering job because it's distracting me from the place I want to be and the things I want to do. And my colleagues would ask me, are you going to teach in a university? And I say, no, that doesn't appeal to me. What you're going to do, I don't know yet, but something will show itself. Yeah. By the time I graduated my MFA, I had my radio show and the first two books were announced, weren't published yet, but I had my radio show, my press was about to start. And my first book was published by a Bulgarian press. Mm-hmm. It was a bilingual book called The Air Around the Butterfly, which, nice. Yeah, which had several reprints and it's also sold out now.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And then to almost immediately reach out to other people in that group and give them the opportunity to have their own work published. What was that like, being able to present those authors with finished copies of their books and just say, like, here you go, you're on your way?
I try to take photos.
Yeah.
Happy authors receiving their books, because there is no other, this, you see the author backlit by happiness and joy. Mm-hmm. And I've had people cry.
Yeah.
Like literal tears rolling down their faces. Mm-hmm. Everybody's smiling. I've had photo of author kissing his book. So everybody is very happy. Many authors consider their books their babies. And all in all, it's an emotional high for everyone. Oh. Making book deliveries.
Oh, that's great. So you hand deliver the books yourself?
Wherever I can, I do. And when authors live in Pennsylvania, I ship them.
Oh, that's great. So have you given thought to doing any other presentations of the author's work?
I would like, as part of the Accents expansion, to have every book into audiobook form.
Oh, nice.
Or most of them. I don't think, and I don't see audiobooks of poetry. And I think mm-hmm. that if any genre lends perfectly to audiobook, it is the poetry genre.
I absolutely agree yeah. with that. I really agree with that, because I even did a presentation for a writer's group a few years ago. I was asked by one of the authors about me possibly doing the audio for their book of poetry. And I told them that I was very flattered that they asked that. But when it comes to poetry, I feel that that needs to be done specifically by the author. Because it's what they're feeling. It's what's coming out of them. That sort of expression, I feel, can best be presented by the author itself in audio form. Would you agree?
I agree, because poetry is infused with emotion, and authors who write their poems, when they read them, they dip into that moment and bring that emotion back to life.
Yeah.
And that's why it is so powerful to listen to authors read their poems,
yeah.
especially if they've had some experience doing that, experience with the mic. It really is powerful. Now,
yeah.
that said, not every poet is a great reader.
True.
In Bulgaria, there is this event several times a year called Actors versus Poets.
Ooh, I like
and
that.
And it's a fight to the death.
Really?
You know, it's a ticketed event in a theater, but
yeah.
it's always sold out, always packed, and you have like seven authors on the stage, seven poets, and then on
yeah.
the other side, seven actors.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors would act out or read the poems. And then the same poems would be read by the poets. And then you will compare. And then at the end, the audience votes.
Oh, that's so great. I love that. And that's something that I think would definitely translate well to American audiences. They not only present an outlet for local poets, but also have community theaters, local theaters, things like that. That would be a wonderful little bit of synergy between those two fields.
Yes.
Wow, that's great. So you're already given a whole lot of different ideas to think about. I think that's wonderful. And so I got to ask, what is next for Accents? Do you have a specific plan going forward?
Yeah, I am so looking forward to our open reading period in November and December. We decided to not have a reading. Instead, we want people to buy a book. An author will buy a book directly from us, from our website, and then forward the receipt and then attach their manuscript with their bio. And I will personally read all of them. I might have helper readers, but I will read and then I'll have my helper readers give me feedback and I'll read again. I might regret deciding to do that, but I want to see what comes into my press. I want the books that my press publishes to reflect my tastes and my goals. So diversity, risky work, original work, people, geographical reach, topical reach. Let's see what happens. I'm very excited about that.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
And so it definitely sounds like Accents is ready to make that big jump to the next level. So I'm excited to see where it goes. If someone were to come up to you and say that they have a poem already done, or they have some poetry written out, or even they're just kind of dwelling on something to get out, what would you recommend that they do? What's one tip you would give to them?
To find a writing group, a group of supportive writers, at least one or two other people whom they can show their work and get feedback, or at least get together to share what they've written. That keeps them on schedule, keep on writing, because it is very easy to stop writing.
But you give them some sort of a deadline, and that will definitely help.
Well, deadline for what? Finding a group would help them keep on writing with some regularity, producing new work with some regularity.
Yeah.
But submission, if you want to submit work to some place, then submission deadline is your deadline normally. People just wrap their... I've noticed that writers wrap their work to submit. Before that, they just tinker with...
That's great. And where can my listeners find you on social media?
I'm very findable on Facebook under my name, and also on every place books are sold. I would encourage your listeners to find Between a Birdcage and a Birdhouse. That's a poetry collection that came out from University Press of Kentucky. And also The Poet's Guide to Publishing, How to Conceive, Arrange, Edit, Publish, and Market a Book of Poetry, that came out from McFarland Publishers. Both of those books came out last year. Okay. And also Accents Publishing, it's on the internet, very findable.
Thank you. This has really been a wonderful conversation with Katerina, and I am really excited to hear where Accents Publishing goes. I'm excited to hear where the Accents podcast goes. It sounds like what she has done here is a real boost to the poetry community in general. She has not only provided a means of getting her own books out there, but also for other poets. Starting from this wonderful homemade quality, it is now on its way to going international. I love seeing how these sorts of presses grow. And I know that Accents will continue to be a wonderful source for poets to get their works out there. So for all of you poets out there, you have a guide, a champion in Katerina. this is someone you definitely want to get in touch with and follow her advice when it comes to getting involved in a writer's group and continuing to push yourself, even when what you are writing doesn't come off as very good. You're at the writing gym when you're doing that. So keep pushing. You do not want to just sit and let your writing fester. You do not want to let those muscles atrophy. You want to keep pushing. You want to keep going forward. And you have people like Katarina to back you up, because in these crazy times, we need your vision. We need your stories. We need your poetry now more than ever. So for Katarina Stoykova, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. And I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to he'sgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@he'sgotit.com.